ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, Tegan Taylor here from Life Matters. Do you rely on grandparents to help pay the bills or look after the kids? You're not alone. Life has gotten busier, more expensive, and grandparents are picking up the slack. This July on Radio National, The Grandparent Trap explores the changing role of grandparents in modern family life. The Grandparent Trap and much more on Life Matters. Search for Life Matters on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a beautiful autumn day and I'm cycling down the back streets of Melbourne to see an expert.
Okay, I really got to look at where this place is.
But probably not in the field, you might think. I'm kind of nervous about it all. I've never been somewhere like this before.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too.
But I am made to feel right at home.
Let's come over here. It's beautiful setup for us. In the sunshine.
Oh, it smells amazing in here too.
Yeah, I love this incense.
Scientists haven't given us concrete answers about when a full-scale quantum computer will be built. And I've spoken to a lot of them. So, I'm thinking outside the box. I've decided to enlist a psychic.
Let me move my crystals out of the way.
You've got to put the crystals back. They're very important.
They are very important.
Okay, hear me out. If everyone is simply guessing how the future will unfold, I might as well go to someone who claims to have top-tier guessing qualifications.
So before a reading, I always like to knock the deck just to cleanse out their energy and just get centred into your sphere. Because obviously
Sarah Jane Kerr has a tarot deck ready and waiting for me.
And we'll collectively inhale together.
And she's being very open-minded about being roped into this.
And exhaling out. And on your next inhale, just setting an intention for the reading today.
Can I say it out loud?
Yeah, say it out loud.
I would like to know when we will get quantum computers.
Beautiful. Let's tune in and see what comes up.
Sarah shuffles her tarot deck, and I can feel the tension building. Am I finally going to get the answers I've been waiting for?
So what's interesting to note is things don't always exist as one particular fixed outcome. They exist as multiple timelines and possibilities. And until the conditions are correct for this to happen, it will still remain a possibility.
So there are multiple possibilities, all existing at once. It sounds a bit like superposition.
It's very quantum of you. But it will drop in when the timing is right.
In this series, I've been trying to find out if quantum computers will change the world. Scientists have been saying that quantum computers are just a decade away. For decades. If even a psychic can't give me a definitive answer, I need to ask different questions. Like, how has quantum computing maintained its momentum with so much uncertainty surrounding it? In the final episode of Science Friction, Dead and Alive, for ABC Radio National, we're unpacking the hype. Once and for all, is a quantum computer going to change the world? Or is one of the biggest stories in science built on wishful thinking? This is episode 4, All Aboard the Hype Train. It's April 2024, and Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, along with the Queensland Premier, stump up for the cameras.
Well, thanks very much, Stephen.
They're announcing a huge investment, $1 billion, into quantum computing.
This is a quantum leap into the next generation of technology right here in Queensland.
Governments want to be on the front foot, investing in the future. And that means they do have to make educated guesses.
What this is doing is saying that we want our innovation to deliver benefit for us here.
They probably wouldn't love me phrasing it this way, but sometimes that means hyping up a reality that just doesn't exist yet.
This technology will define the generations of our kids and grandkids
Albanese is talking up a deal he made with the company PsiQuantum and its endeavour to build a million-qubit quantum computer in Queensland. Nobody has managed this yet. The biggest quantum computer at the time of recording is 6,100 qubits. And that computer is not PsiQuantum's. In fact, the company has remained pretty tight-lipped about its progress. So, you might be wondering, how does a company attract a billion-dollar contract when the technology they've promised hasn't even been demonstrated to work? What this really comes down to is hype.
Australia is making a bold bet on the future of quantum computing. Both governments are each committing about $470 million in equity and loans to technology firm PsiQuantum.
Its co-founder is hoping to have this system operating by the end of the decade.
One of the people driving this hype train is Stella Todorovich, media director for PsiQuantum in Australia. And she is very good at her job.
This is obviously an incredibly ambitious project. And thank you for interviewing us today because it's something that we don't get to talk about very often. We've been in stealth mode for many years, working away to get to this point.
Stealth mode isn't something Stella just came up with. It's a phrase the company has used a lot over the years. PsiQuantum is notoriously secretive. And not saying much is a pretty tried and true approach. If the details are light and the promises are big, it means that you can keep working without too much pushback. But it does mean that the things that you do say carry even more weight.
We are currently at the precipice of what is the next arms race. What is the next space race? It's the race to quantum. And we have a very good opportunity here in Australia to actually make this a reality.
I caught up with Stella when I visited the company's Brisbane offices earlier this year. You heard part of my visit last episode, where I introduced you to PsiQuantum's plans to build a million-qubit machine. Now, listening to Stella, I really want to believe that it's going to happen.
If you're asking if the investment is justified, of course, I'm going to sit here and say yes, right? But the proof will be in the pudding. And I think that everyone just wants to see this work, however we get there.
Doesn't she just make you excited about the bright future of quantum computing? But here's the thing. When I push a little, even Stella can't predict the future.
The plan, as I understand it, was to have the system operational by the end of 2027. That is mighty close. Is that going to be the case?
What I want you to think about when you think about timelines is that this is obviously an incredibly ambitious project, right? So our timelines are ambitious and we're working incredibly fast.
Is that a no? Not 2027?
No, it's not. No, but like that is the goal, right? That's what we're working towards every single day.
Stella does clarify 2027 for the site to be up and running. 2030 for the quantum computer itself to be switched on.
Yes, a utility-scale useful quantum computer.
I hope so. I really hope so. It would be really cool if it happens. Do you think that...
If you couldn't hear that, Stella does not like the doubt in my voice.
No,
if it happens...
This can-do attitude would be music to the ears of governments and investors. They need to predict the future, and that's no easy task, especially when the topic is something as impenetrable as quantum physics.
Talking about quantum was always a challenge.
This is Tara Robison, who might have the perfect CV for this topic.
Do you mind talking about being a PR person and also doing this research at the same time? Because I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Tara worked with quantum physicists for almost a decade, helping them communicate their work to the public and to investors. Research is expensive, after all. Scientists need to prove their work is worth the cost. So, Tara was helping physicists hype up their work, while at the same time, she was working on a PhD, exploring the role of hype in science.
Hype is, I guess I describe it as exaggerated, sensationalized, simplified, sometimes a bit sexy stories about science and technology. the reason that we use hype is that fields of science exist in this constant state of imagining a future where they've found new information, found a new application, but they're not there yet. So when they're looking for funding in order to make their research actually happen, they're painting this view of the future where certain things are going to work out really well in scientific research, and it doesn't always happen.
At first, Tara was looking at hype in space travel and how NASA used it to promote its missions.
And it just so happened that at the same time as my supervisors said, hey, do you want to be a NASA historian? If not, you're going to need to add to this thesis. Quantum was also kind of taking off in terms of people actually picking up press releases. Government sectors were like, oh, maybe we should have a national strategy for this. And I would say it was 2016 when I started to think, okay, I'm going to add a quantum communication chapter to this thesis on hype because I don't see how I could not.
In 2016, it wasn't just big players like Google or IBM in the quantum race. Startups were spinning off from tech giants and research labs. Coincidentally, 2016 was the year that PsiQuantum was founded. It was a sign that scientists were looking at advances in quantum computing and seeing a future where this tech was viable. And by viable, I mean they might actually make some money.
So all of a sudden it was like we're not just talking about physics and science and being in a lab or writing on a whiteboard.
We're talking about real-world applications. Quantum computers being better than regular computers at solving problems.
When we moved into talking about technologies and applications, you were still using hype because you're still creating this vision of a world where the quantum technology is feasible and useful.
Now, in the defense of quantum researchers, they're absolutely not the only ones who use hype to their advantage. As I said, every scientist needs to sell themselves in some respects in order to fund their research. In science, that looks like
breakthrough announcements. We have a lot of world-first announcements.
But according to Tara, there's a push and pull to this hype cycle.
It's this interesting use of pessimism, I guess, in an effort to like really recalibrate expectations. So they're constantly doing this little dance of excitement and then moderating the excitement.
In 2016, Tara was stuck in the middle of this churning hype cycle. In her day job, she would write press releases about the latest quantum research. In her studies, she was unpacking how her own press releases could drum up hype to the betterment or detriment of science.
I guess it was helpful, actually, if I think about it this way, because I was more aware of maybe we should moderate the story as we're telling it rather than try and kind of like catch it once it's already out there.
It's been a decade since Tara was in that position, and it makes me wonder how long hype can really prop up a scientific field.
So I think it probably depends on who you're talking to.
Tara tells me about something called the Gartner Hype Cycle.
G-A-R-T-N-E-R, hype cycle.
It's a visual representation of how things usually go when a specific technology is riding the hype train. I'll try and draw it out for you. The graph starts out in the bottom left-hand corner with a technology trigger, the spark of an interesting idea that gets people's attention. From there, the line climbs and climbs until it reaches a peak of inflated expectations. The downturn that follows is called the trough of disillusionment. According to the graph, there's then a slight uptick called the slope of enlightenment. That's followed by a plateau of productivity, a horizontal line heading out into infinity. This marks the point where the technology has been shown to work and adopted in the mainstream.
And quantum at one stage was sitting on what they call the peak of inflated expectations. And the danger is that then it drops into this dip where those expectations have been disappointed and then funding is harder to find.
The Gartner hype cycle isn't just some abstract line graph. It can have a very real effect on tech funding. It's something investors keep tabs on so that they know where to put their money.
To maintain levels of financial support, hype is part of that journey of sharing the science and where you think it's going to go. It's not necessarily unique to quantum. I'm thinking about like AI and autonomous systems had a similar kind of trajectory. But maybe the thing with quantum is that they need to sustain it over quite a long period of time in order to make those applications a reality.
According to Tara, we all have a part to play in keeping that hype from spiraling out of control, whether it's quantum or AI.
It starts from the scientists, it goes through the university press office, it lands in the journalist's lap, and then the journalist tells a story that might get picked up by other people. Everybody in that pipeline has an element of responsibility for how the narrative of the science is kind of told.
And when the science can be difficult to understand, and like quantum physics,
I think it's easier to use the hyped up narrative because that's the exciting part of the story.
I have to be honest though, I am finding myself personally falling into a trough of disillusionment. And you might know one of the reasons I'm feeling so deflated. On ABC Radio National, you're listening to Dead and Alive, a special series from Science Friction. I'm Jacinta Bowler. When we're talking about hype in quantum computing, about being on the brink of a tech revolution, it's hard to ignore what's going on right now. And what's going on right now is artificial intelligence. I don't know if this will surprise you, but AI has come up in every single conversation I've had.
I mean, at the moment, we are very focused on artificial intelligence.
AI is certainly what everyone is thinking about right now.
Sometimes it's because I've brought it up, but it is front of everyone's minds.
Certainly AI is the squirrel a lot of us are looking at right now, and there's no doubt it deserves some attention, and we ought to be looking at it pretty seriously too.
AI is actually delivering real results now, and presumably, you know, AI is going to get better and better and better.
These days, AI is everywhere. It's in every search box, added to basically every workspace. Whatever you think about it, the technology is here and now. Quantum, well, it still has a bit to go.
Obviously, AI has blown up enormously in the last few years. It's totally eclipsed quantum computing.
This is Gideon Litchfield, a tech journalist who has been covering quantum computing since before qubits existed. Gideon points out that it's very, very likely that a full-scale quantum computer, which doesn't exist yet, will have limited applications when it does. And the worry is that artificial intelligence can do those things better and sooner.
Some of the problems that people thought could be solved with quantum systems are now starting to be solved with AI.
One of the biggest examples of this is protein folding. The proteins in our bodies naturally fold in weird, complex ways. Being able to predict this molecular origami means that we could make better drugs for diseases like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's.
That was something people thought quantum computing would be able to solve and nobody else would 20 years ago, and today we have a solution.
An artificial intelligence lab called DeepMind beat them to it.
AI makes huge progress predicting one of biology's greatest challenges.
Developing a program called AlphaFold.
The game has changed. AI triumphs at solving protein structures.
DeepMind AI cracks 50-year-old problem of protein folding.
One day, quantum might improve on things. AlphaFold isn't perfect. It's still a classical system trying to recreate quantum behaviour. But it is out there. Right now, being useful.
And so I think quantum computing companies obviously feel some kind of pressure to keep on showing that what they have is going to deliver results.
And so we're back on the hype train. Toot toot! In this series, I've been trying to find out if quantum computers will change the world. But there's another question that's easier to answer. How has quantum computing already changed the world?
I'm Warwick Bowen. I'm a professor of physics at the University of Queensland, and I'm the director of the Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence in Quantum Biotechnology, or QBIC.
That's a real mouthful.
Oh my gosh, it is. Simple terms, what I do is I'm a quantum gadget guy. I like to build quantum tools.
There's more to quantum technology than quantum computers. GPS, lasers, fiber optic internet, solar panels, accurate clocks. We have all of these because of our understanding of quantum physics.
So a good example is MRI. We've had MRI machines for, 80 years, and that's based on our understanding of the quantum properties of your body.
Right now, Warwick is using the weirdness of quantum to make other medical diagnostics tools, like concussion sensors. Warwick's gadgets might not be as purely quantum as a million-qubit entangled computer, but they have benefited from the impressive shadow quantum computing has cast for the last 30 years.
There is definitely more money if you call things a quantum sensor at the moment. That may change, but right now quantum is a hot topic.
Quantum is a buzzword. And so others doing interesting quantum research are able to catch a ride on the hype train of quantum computing. Warwick isn't a quantum computing expert or a PR person with stakeholders on his mind. He's a physicist with a deep understanding of quantum technology. So I wanted to ask what he really thought about this whole situation. Will we get a full-scale quantum computer that changes everything?
It's a question I've oscillated on during my career. So I've been a quantum physicist for 30 or so years. If you'd asked me very early on, I would have been very pessimistic. Then I got more pessimistic and more pessimistic. And then things started changing for me.
At the risk of falling into a hype trap, there were scientific breakthroughs. And as a result, people were starting to stack up the qubits that are needed to start solving problems.
Industry started investing in quantum computing, big industry like IBM and Google. And when the technology starts to get into engineers' hands, if they're well-funded enough, it's really amazing what they can do.
Dare I ask, when is it going to happen?
If you look at the progress that's being made and you put your optimist's hat on, there's room to be optimistic that we'll have useful quantum computers. And if you just do that optimistic assessment, maybe 5 years' time.
Let's be honest. Journalists are rarely the optimistic type. So I might have to see it to believe it. But if I follow Warwick's advice and slide on my optimist hat, I can maybe start to believe that we're on the brink of something important.
If you look at the progress, there is steady progress. All the time, companies are coming out with new announcements. They're building computers that are bigger, faster, more fault tolerant, better error correction. I do think we will get to something. If it's not by the end of the decade, maybe by the middle of the next decade.
We are moving quickly, so I feel it will be sooner than that.
Could be true. It could be a lot of hype, and we'll just see what happens. I'm okay with that.
Journalists have been asking this question for a really long time.
We believe this is doable. We all disagree on the timescale because it's very hard to look into that crystal ball, but very possibly doable in my lifetime and hopefully a bit before that.
That was our guest from episode 3, Bob Clark, speaking in the year 2000 when he was at the helm of quantum technology in Australia. So, what's his opinion now in 2026 as an outsider looking in?
The timeline, you know, when you're starting from a blank sheet, frankly, you've got so many problems ahead of you that you just keep going. And we did that over the first decade, and arguably that was also done over the second decade. I think in this third decade, particularly the startups can see the light at the end of the tunnel now.
Will quantum computers change the world? Well, maybe. With noisy qubits and nosy journalists, not to mention AI, it seems to be hitting its make or break moment. Even if I do still have my doubts on the computers themselves, one thing has stuck with me while reporting this series. When a technology comes along that promises to improve people's day-to-day lives, we, as a society, are willing to take a stab in the dark. And that's Warwick, our gadget guy's, reflection as well.
If we do build quantum computers, they will be possibly the most sophisticated, complicated machine that humanity has ever made. And they will fundamentally change how we can do computation. So that's a massive benefit for science and for humanity. And so I think it's worth the risk. I think we need to be investing in trying to make it happen.
There is no guarantee it will work. In the same way, there's no guarantee we'll find a cure for cancer, or accurately predict the weather, or manage to create a podcast about quantum computing that people actually want to listen to. We push for it anyway, and hope that with all that work, all that hype, it pays off. Science Friction, Dead and Alive is a special series for ABC Radio National. It was made on the lands of the Wurundjeri, Gadigal and Menang Noongar people. It's reported and presented by me, Jacinta Vola. Our senior producer is Shelby Traynor. Our engineer is Tim Jenkins. Thanks to producers Fiona Pepper and James Bullen for script editing. Stay entangled and thanks for listening.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.